Moshe, Emor El HaKohanim B'nei Aharon, V'yomarta Alehem, L'nefesh Lo Yitama B'amov. Hashem said to Moshe, say to the Kohanim, the sons of Aharon, and tell them, each of you shall not contaminate himself to a dead person among his people. Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Yom HaAtzma'ut and Parshat Emor, and I need to qualify various things here. First of all, recording and first broadcast is Yom Rivi'i, Wednesday, the third day of ER 5776, corresponding to May 11th. It is, in Israel, Yom HaZikaron L'Chayalei Chalalei Ma'arachot Yisrael. It is a memorial day for the fallen Israeli soldiers throughout the history of the state. It therefore is a sad day. It therefore is a day that I am not going to play music on the show. But I would venture to guess that most people who are listening to this show will be hearing it after Yom HaZikaron, on Yom HaAtzma'ut or later, in which case music might have been appropriate. I just don't feel comfortable pre-recording a show and pretending that it is a day that it is not. Maybe I should, but I'm not going to. Add to that, I have a sore throat or a hoarse voice, which has come from my post-nasal drip, which occasionally affects my voice. And I hope that you'll be able to hear and understand me. I will talk about Yom HaZikaron, I'll talk about Yom HaAtzma'ut, and I will talk about Parshat Emor, which presents another problem. If you are listening to this show in Eretz Yisrael, then you do not have the additional problem. This week, for anyone in Israel, is Parshat Emor. However, in Chutz La'aretz, outside of Israel, this week is Parshat Kedoshim, which we in Israel read last week. I spoke about that last week, but I'll go over a certain aspect of the issue again this week. But first, since it's already afternoon of not only Yom HaZikaron, but Erev Yom HaAtzma'ut, we did not say Tachanun in Shul, and therefore we will do Psalm 121. Kuf Kaf Aleph. Shir la ma'alot, esa enai el heharim, me'ayin yavo ezri. Ezri me'im Adonai, osei shamayim va'aretz. Al yitain lamot raglecha, al yanum shomerecha. Hine lo yanum velo yishan, shomer Yisrael. Adonai shomerecha, Adonai tzilecha, al yad yiminecha. Yomam hashemesh lo yakeka, v'yoreach balayla. Adonai yishmorcha mikol ra, yishmor et nafshecha. Adonai yishmor tzeitecha uvorecha, uvoecha, me'ata v'ad olam. Achinu kol beit Yisrael, hanatunim batzara v'ashivya, ha'omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, ha'makom yirachem aleihem v'yotzieim, mitzara lirvacha, u'me'afela l'ora, u'mishibud l'geula, hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv, v'nomar, amen. Someone raised the issue with me at Mincha earlier today as to maybe we should say Tachanun because today is Yom HaZikaron, the memorial day for fallen Israeli soldiers. In fact, right after Aleinu, we said a Kel Mole Rachamim for the soldiers that have fallen, and definitely appropriate for the day. On the other hand, using the guidelines set down by the chief rabbinate over the years, we did not say Tachanun as its function being the afternoon before the holiday of Yom HaAtzma'ut, And I also used Ta'anit Esther as a model for that. Since Ta'anit Esther is a fast day, when we should be saying Avinu Malkeinu and Tachanun and Slichot, and sure enough, in the morning of Ta'anit Esther, we do say Avinu Malkeinu and Tachanun and Slichot, but in the afternoon at Mincha, whether you daven earlier or not doesn't matter, we don't say Tachanun, we don't say Avinu Malkeinu, and there is no Slichot, because it is Erev Purim. So Ta'anit Esther wears those two hats, and Yom HaZikaron in Israel wears those two hats. As such, it reminds us of the unique aspect of Israel's Independence Day, where a very, very serious conscious decision was made to immediately precede it by Yom HaZikaron, rather than what other countries do. Take the United States as an example. You have July 4th as Independence Day, and May 30th, or now however they moved it to the end of May, on a Thursday or whatever, is Memorial Day. And they purposely keep them separate because the mood of a Memorial Day is different from the mood of an Independence Day. And here they purposely put them consecutive because the moods are different and because each one serves to give a perspective to the other day. The independence of the State of Israel came at a serious cost in lives, and that should never ever be minimized or forgotten. And the powers that be a long time ago decided that one way of not forgetting that point is to have Yom HaZikaron, which transits into Yom Ha'atzma'ut. And the opposite would be said also. You're focusing on the loss of lives of soldiers in the War of Independence and the Six-Day War and the campaign in Sinai and the Yom Kippur War and the Lebanon Wars and various and sundry other issues where soldiers have lost their lives. You need a perspective on that, that there is an independent Jewish state in the land of Israel that is now 68 years strong, and there hadn't been such a state in a very, very long time. So whether you like it or not, that's what was chosen. I personally feel it's a very poignant combination, even though the moods get a little bit of mixture, as today Yom HaZikaron fades into Yom Ha'atzma'ut. Over the last number of weeks, many people have written to me and spoken to me and asked why in Chutz La'aretz did they not double up Acharei and Kedoshim while we were reading Acharei on outside of Israel's eighth day of Pesach, and then the following week we were reading Kedoshim. All they had to do in Chutz La'aretz would be to double up on Acharei and Kedoshim, and we would be back in sync. Instead, what happens is we wait until Matot Maseh, 16 weeks of being out of sync, in order for us to split it and to have it remain combined in Chutz La'aretz in order to get back into sync. It's a long period of time that our Parsha HaShavua is a week ahead of those in Chutz La'aretz. The answer needs you to concentrate and to think, and this is basically the story. The question that you need to understand the answer to is what happened on the eighth day of Pesach. Did people in Chutz La'aretz, outside of Israel, delay their reading of Parsha Shavua in order to have a special reading for the 8th day of Pesach, and they fell behind schedule? Or did we in Israel jump the gun and jump ahead in Parsha Shavua by reading it on that day, which around the world is celebrated as the 8th day of Pesach? It sounds the same, but it isn't at all the same. What you need to know is that the system of reading the entire Torah in the course of a year, beginning it and ending it on Simchat Torah, what sedras get doubled and what gets split for various reasons, was created in and for Chutz La'aretz, outside of Israel. When it first came into practice in Israel, there was a three-year-plus cycle, much shorter weekly readings. The Torah was not completed every year. It was a totally different kind of system. Chutz La'aretz had the yearly cycle. Somewhere along the line in history, that cycle was adopted by Eretz Yisrael to the point where now Jews all over the world, Israel and elsewhere, read a yearly cycle of Torah reading, beginning and ending on Simchat Torah. Therefore, as much as we would like to think otherwise, we in Israel jumped ahead. And therefore, we have to do something to slow back down to get back into sync. The only thing that can do that is for us to split a double sedra from Chutz La'aretz. In a Shana Me'uberet, a 13-month year, a 2-Adar year like this one, there are no doubles until Matot Masei. Matot Masei will be read combined in Chutz La'aretz because the system calls for it, for various reasons. We in Israel will take that double and split it. In Chutz La'aretz, they can't take two sedras that are supposed to be read separately and combine them. It throws the calendar out of whack. And therefore, we will be out of sync until Matot Masei, which in Chutz La'aretz, as was originally scheduled for this kind of a year, Matot and Masei are combined. And we artificially split the two so that by Devarim, the Shabbat before Tisha B'Av, we are then united with our brethren of the diaspora, so to speak, and we all read the same weekly portion. That's how it goes. There are little details, which I won't go into now, about which of the seven pairs of sedras that are sometimes combined and sometimes read separately have to do, which ones have to do with the extra month that you have to account for, and the others have other factors, geared towards completing the cycle of Torah reading just in time for Simchat Torah with Vizot HaBracha, and to not have a Shabbat that we have nothing to read or going ahead and reading the wrong sedra. It's not so simple, but that's the way it works. All right, enough on that. Let's switch over to a calendar issue with Yom HaAtzma'ut. The Declaration of Independence of the State of Israel was decreed or issued, or whatever the right term is, on Friday, May 14th, 1948, corresponding to the fifth day of Iyar 5708. That date was established as an annual holiday commemorating the establishment of the state, notwithstanding the fact that it triggered the War of Independence with the simultaneous attacks of many of our Arab neighbors. Nonetheless, the establishment of the state, the date, 5 Iyar, became the day for Yom HaAtzma'ut. Early on, in the early years of statehood, it was discovered that when Hei Iyar fell on Friday and on Shabbat, that there would be a problem with festivities, government and state, ceremonies, versus proper honor of the Shabbat. And rather than separate the celebrations of Yom HaAtzma'ut from the day that was established as a festival, the Rabbanut and the Knesset and the government, whoever made the decisions in those days, decided to qualify the day of Yom HaAtzma'ut in the following manner. Yom HaAtzma'ut is the fifth day of Iyar. Unless it falls on a Friday or a Shabbat, in which case it is taken earlier to the Thursday before, which means Thursday the 3rd of Iyar, or Thursday the 4th of Iyar, like this year, would be the observed Yom HaAtzma'ut. Religiously, that means the Yom HaAtzma'ut davening and whatever that entails. And nationally, it means that all of the official ceremonies, beginning with the one this evening, which transits between Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaAtzma'ut, and continuing into whatever happens during tomorrow, the National Bible Contest, the Prize of Israel, and all other things that are done during the day, would not encroach on Shabbat observance. Far more recently was the realization that when Yom HaAtzma'ut falls out on Monday, then Yom HaZikaron, Memorial Day, is Sunday, and with some of the preparation and some of the ceremonies being on the eve of Yom HaZikaron, it would encroach on Shabbat at its beginning. And therefore the rule for Yom HaAtzma'ut was amended to say not only if it falls out on a Friday or a Shabbat, it's pulled back to Thursday, but if it falls on a Monday, it is postponed to Tuesday, so Yom HaZikaron could be Monday and not interfere with Shabbat on either end. As complicated as this gets, I praise those who had the insight of not separating national celebration from religious celebration. We are one people, and some of us daven and some of us don't, and some of us say Hallel and some of us don't, but there is an attempt at unifying the nature of Yom HaAtzma'ut, both its national aspect and its religious aspect, and that has an impact on the people who observe Yom HaAtzma'ut, and I find that that is very much beseder. So I will be saying Hallel tomorrow, which is only the fourth day of Iyar, not on Friday, which is the fifth, because of this rule change. The irony of it is that Yom HaAtzma'ut can never be celebrated on a Friday when the original Declaration of Independence was issued on a Friday. But that's the way the calendar works. So we have a Yom HaAtzma'ut Mukdam. Today is Yom HaZikaron Mukdam. And it does not change the way the day is marked. And as I said, without going into all of its detail, there are prayer books that have been published for Yom HaAtzma'ut. And the issue of who accepts them and who doesn't is an irksome one, which I will spend a little time discussing. One of the many points I like to make about Yom HaTzma'ut, sometimes I say it up front, which I'm going to do now, and sometimes elsewhere in my talk, is the official greetings that were established way back when, where one person says to his fellow, Moadim l'simcha, happy holiday, and the response is L'geula shleima, to the final redemption, to the complete redemption. I like that formulation very, very much, because there are two very personally irksome points of view on opposite sides of where I find myself. One that says, how can you celebrate in a religious manner the establishment of a secular state by non-religious leaders, some anti-religious leaders, a very small minority of religious people, when there are all kind of things that are done that are improper from a Jewish legal perspective. And therefore, as a religious Jew who is committed to Torah and mitzvot, I reject Yom HaTzma'ut, the State of Israel, and everything that it represents. I totally reject that outlook, and I'll explain why in a moment. And on the other side of the coin come the people who say the aspirations of Jews throughout Jewish history to return to their land and have a state of their own has been realized. And I find that a bothersome perspective, because we have come a long way, but we have a long way yet to go. In other words, what I'm saying is I, as a member of the Dati Lumi camp, which is the national religious people, feel very strongly that the establishment of the State of Israel, with all of its flaws, is a positive step in the direction of an ultimate goal of the messianic times, the final redemption, the complete redemption, Yemot HaMashiach, etc. To be continued. You are listening to Torah Tibbetz Audio for Yom HaTzma'ut and Parshat Emor. Remember that I apologize for being hoarse. Remember, too, that I'm recording on Yom HaZikaron, and therefore I'm not putting in music that would be otherwise appropriate. Getting back to finish up that point, and then we'll take a look into Parshat Emor. There are religious non-Zionists, religious anti-Zionists. There are non-religious Zionists. There are anti-religious Zionists. And then, squeezed in between, there are religious Zionists, and I really should add another category of religious people who are Zionistic people but not religious Zionists. In other words, Zionism as a national idea is embraced by certain people who happen to be religious, and they do not consider their Zionism as part of their religion. The religious Zionist, I believe, and I'm not speaking for all of us, I'm speaking for myself, I believe with all my heart that as much as I recognize that my calendar includes Torah holidays and post-biblical holidays, and as much as I accept the notion that there is a Hanukkah and there is a Purim, so too there is a Yom HaAtzma'ut and a Yom Yerushalayim. There are technical differences because of what was around when the first two were established compared to what we have today. but from a religious perspective, I say Hallel on Yom Ha'atzma'ut with a bracha, with the same religious feeling as I say it on each morning of Hanukkah. And there are, as I said, many different flavors to the Jewish people. I know people who are very Zionistic, will not say Hallel on Yom Yerushalayim, but will celebrate Yom Atzmaut. They will celebrate Yom Atzmaut with a mangal, which, by the way, I find quite ironic to take the national favorite activity of barbecuing, especially on Yom Ha'atzma'ut, and identify it as a mangal, which is a Turkish word, not a Jewish word, not a Hebrew word. The correct word in Hebrew would be matzleh, and or al ha'esh, but mangal is Turkish, barbecue is, I guess, English, and yet that's the national pastime. I'll also add, just for the record, that I do not find Yom Ha'atzma'ut conflicting with Sfirat HaOmer, meaning that, well, it's a whole thing, but I'll give you the quick version of it. The period of the Omer from Pesach till Shavuot was originally a festive period. It went from the barley offering in the Beit HaMikdash in the temple on the second day of Pesach, and it culminated with the offering of the new wheat offering known as Mincha Chadasha Lashem, or Shtei HaLechem. And if you picture a, not Pesach and Shavuot as separate holidays, but as Pesach collectively as the first day of Chag, and Shavuot is the last day of Chag, known as Atzeret, then the days in between, which this time are not just 5 days of Chol HaMoed or 6 days of Chol HaMoed, they are 49 days, or 40 days, whatever, 42, 43, 44. It's something a little bit like that in feeling. With the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, without the Omer HaTenufan, without the Shtei HaLechem, the counting became a hollow experience, required, according to many, by rabbinic decree, in commemoration of the temple and in prayer for the temple's restoration. But the days in between, the days of the counting, lost their pizzazz. And they did not become nothing, because not only does nature abhor a vacuum, but apparently the calendar does too. They became melancholy days, semi-mournful days, associated with the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, associated with the deaths of 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva, either by plague or in battles against the Romans, and also associated with certain episodes during the Crusades. And it became a sadder point, to the point where the Shulchan Aruch says weddings can't take place during the Omer, and haircutting and shaving is forbidden, and other forms of entertainment, and various and sundry other practices that are followed either halachically or by time-honored minhag, or by acceptance on the part of the people of Israel. That does not mean that the days of the Omer are intrinsically sad. They became melancholy and sad and mournful, partially mournful, with the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. But that leaves the opportunity to restore them to their joyous level. That was done with Lag BaOmer, based on conflicting traditions that the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva stopped dying on Lag BaOmer, or they only died during a period of 33 days out of the 49 days of the Omer, the result of which is different customs as to whether the beginning of the mournful period starts at the beginning of the counting and goes till Lag BaOmer or till after Lag BaOmer? Or does it start on the first of Iyar and go to the beginning of Shavuot, of Sivan, with the 3 days before the commemoration of Matan Torah? That already weakens the whole structure. Then, as I said, Lag BaOmer became originally a semi-joyous day. The expression was Kitzat Simcha, a little bit of joy, to dispel the Kitzat Avelut, the little bit of mourning that was the style, and still is, of our behavior during the Omer. Then you find a passage in Shulchan Aruch, commented on by the Mishnah Berurah, that discusses a Brit Milah, a ritual circumcision, that takes place during the days of the Omer. And it mentions there that the father of the baby, and the Moel, and the Sandek, have a Yom Tov, a festive kind of day, on the day of the Brit, and they can prepare for it by shaving and taking a haircut on the day before, close to evening, to prepare for their personal Yom Tov. So if we were dealing with the 3 week or the 9 day mourning period for the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, there would be certain rules that are more absolute, not the ease by which the strictures of the Omer period, which are subject to different customs, remember, that they are superseded by the personal joy of the father of a newborn baby who is going to be circumcised. And that indicates that the days are intrinsically festive, only temporarily, although a long temporarily, mournful, but just like Lag BaOmer was transformed, and I should add that from the Hasidic and Kabbalistic side of the whole picture, Lag BaOmer became not just Kitzat Simcha, but it became a full-blown festive bash. And that's fine, and it doesn't clash with the mournful period of the Omer. It sort of gives us that feeling of good and better things to come. Now, if, this is my own analysis of it, if a father of a baby can shave and take a haircut for his personal Yom Tov, I see an obvious leap or step, shouldn't say leap, short step, into the national joy of celebrating the establishment of the State of Israel, and also permitting, which I will do when I finish recording this show, to shave in honor of the holiday of Yom HaAtzmaut. I know that when I do that, not everyone within the religious Zionist camp will shave Yom HaAtzmaut. Some of the people feel very conscious or self-conscious about the, I don't know exactly how to put it, and I don't want to accuse anyone of different kind of feelings, but it seems to me sometimes that you have to explain too much about your feelings to explain why you're clean-shaven, and it's better to just go through Yom HaAtzmaut, have your mangal, say your Hallel, daven this and do that, and watch the Bible contest on TV, and not shave, because that's a statement that continues. I don't know if I'm being fair to that, but it's a strong feeling of mine, and I am personally, as I mentioned earlier, going to be shaving shortly. I'm getting close to the time that I'll be going to shul for Ma'ariv of Yom HaAtzmaut, but my intention is to prepare for Yom HaAtzmaut and honor the day with shaving, trimming my beard, and wearing my new tie, which is sort of like a Israeli flag, and a cap that I made this morning at a new cap printing place, which has a Magen David and a 68, which I would show you if this were a video rather than audio. Let me finish this piece about Yom HaTzmaut with part of the Arvit service tonight after the Amidah, with the words that will be said in many communities, which expands the idea of what I mentioned before about the greetings of Moadim L'Simcha, responding with L'Geula Shlema. We will say, Yehi Ratzon Milfonecha, Adonai Eloheinu V'Elohei Avoteinu. May it be your will, God, our God, and the God of our fathers. Shekeshem Shezachinu La'atchalta D'Geula. As we were privileged to the beginning of the redemption, Kain nizkeh lishmoa kol shofaro shel Mashiach tzidkenu b'mheirav yomenu. So may we hear the sound of the shofar of Mashiach speedily in our time. That, to me, encapsulates the feeling of we have a half-full glass, which we should acknowledge to God in thanks and gratitude for what we have, and a recognition that the glass is not yet full and there are still more good things to come, which we shouldn't sit on our hands and wait for, but we should actually act in order to hasten the final redemption. By the way, between Parshat Kedoshim, which is being read this Shabbat all over the world, and Parshat Emor, which is being read here in Israel, which I will speak about momentarily, you've got 51 mitzvot in Kedoshim packed into 64 pesukim. In Emor, you have 63 mitzvot in more pesukim, so the turns out that Kedoshim is even more mitzvah-dense than Emor, but Emor is no slouch. In fact, I was going to ask, which I will, what do the following have in common? Buzz Aldrin, K2, Avis, John Adams, Moshe Charette, the Amazon River, and India, and Parshat Emor. The answer is they're all number two. Buzz Aldrin was the second person to step foot on the moon. I would say that most people, if you ask them who's the first man on the moon, will say either Armstrong and forget the Neil, or say Neil Armstrong without hesitation. And who came down the ladder a number of hours later to be the second person to step foot on the moon, they won't know. The answer is Buzz Aldrin. Tallest mountain in the world, highest mountain in the world, Mount Everest, very good. Second highest mountain in the world, I don't know. Answer, doesn't even have a name, I think it does, but it's officially known as K2. Avis Car Rental used to boast that they're number two to Hertz. They didn't mention Hertz by name. We're number two, but we try harder. John Adams, of course, was the second president of the United States. Moshe Charette was the second prime minister of the state of Israel. What's interesting about his term in office is he became the prime minister after David Ben-Gurion got angry with his cabinet and quit. And then he was followed by David Ben-Gurion, who made friends again with his colleagues and became the prime minister again. So I don't remember how long Moshe Charette served. Obviously, it was long enough to get him onto a 20 shekel bill. And that's his story. The Amazon River is second only to the Nile. Again, a number two. And India is the second most populous country in the world after China. Emor is the second most mitzvah-filled sedra, second only to Ki Teitzei with 74 mitzvot. Now, by and large, Emor's mitzvot are very neatly categorized. The first major bunch deals with Kohanim, Kohen Gadol, sacrifices in the Beit HaMikdash, rules for the Kohanim, and of which there are many, all of which most practically apply to Kohanim and only academically are should be of interest to us, but some of them do apply to us as well. And that's most of the first half of Emor. I want to just mention one here because there's an interesting phenomenon when it comes to mitzvot. The Kohen is told that he may not become defiled to a dead body. He has to avoid contact with a dead body, even being under the same roof as a dead body, with the exception of his close seven relatives, father, mother, brother, unmarried sister, son, daughter, and wife. The unmarried sister business only applies when there's a Beit HaMikdash. Today a Kohen would mourn his married sister as well. But the context in the written word was the issue of becoming ritually defiled, Tameh, and the Torah makes a point of saying that the Kohen does become Tameh, which means be involved in the funeral and the burial of his close relative. And that's what it says in the Torah. Comes the oral law, which is part of Torah. I am not talking about rabbinic legislation. I am talking about oral law, which has an equal status of the written word. Together, it is considered all d'oraita of Torah origin. The Torah says, the oral Torah teaches us that all of us mourn, that means sit shiva and shloshim and other practices of mourning, our close seven relatives, father, mother, brother, sister, son, daughter, spouse. And even though that does not find itself in the written Torah, it is not merely an extrapolation or an extension of the Torah law on a level of rabbinic law. It has equal status as coming from the oral Torah. Enough said about that for now. Next point. There are two mitzvot, which I'll get back to in a moment, followed by many mitzvot, the rest of the Sedra, that deals with the Chagim, the festivals. So Emor can be summarized fairly simply by saying that it discusses Kohen-related issues and the festivals. Now, before I get to the two in the middle, the festivals also need a point made, and that is that we have a prohibition and a positive command that neatly overlap and go hand in hand when it comes to each of the days of Chagim. I am referring to the first day of Pesach, the seventh day of Pesach. Whatever is done in Chutz La'aretz doubles up these things, but that's another issue. First day of Pesach, seventh day of Pesach, the single day of Shavuot, the day of Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, first day of Sukkot, and the eighth day of Sukkot, also known as Shmini Atzeret, also known as Simchat Torah. Those 7 days are holy, and there is a prohibition against doing certain categories of creative activities known as Melacha, Melachot. And in addition to the prohibition comes the positive command to abstain from these prohibitions. I don't know if you follow that. Every Chag, and Shabbat to be added from elsewhere has not just a prohibition, you are not allowed to do X, Y, and Z, or A to Z, but you are required to abstain from the Malachot A through Z. That sounds like the same thing, but it's not. And very briefly, I'll sum it up by saying that abstaining from Malacha, not doing what you're not allowed to do, is motivated by fear of God, fear of heaven, fear of sin, fear of punishment. But abstaining makes us partners with God in the observance of these Chagim, where we gladly give up these Malachot in honor of God who forbid them. That is motivated by Ahava, love of God. Kiddush Hashem and Chilul Hashem are the two mitzvot in the middle, which I didn't talk about. I wish you a Yom Ha'atzma'ut Sameach, L'Geula Shleima, Shabbat Shalom, L'Hishtameah.